Well, once again, we here at Robin Hood Radio and the Hoskins Library in Sharon have one of their virtual book signing 2.1 events coming up via Zoom, and it is coming up at the Hotchkiss Library on February 23rd at 8 p.m., and that's Richard Lazarus, Hotchkiss Library. It's at the Rule of Five, Making Climate History at the Supreme Court. Richard, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, delighted to be here. Thanks so much for the invitation.
So Richard, let's talk a little bit introduce you to people around here, your background, and the book, The Rule of Five, and how we got to where we are today.
Sure. So I'm a professor of law at Harvard Law School in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I've been a law professor since about 1983, so quite a long time, beginning in my mid-20s. But in addition to being a law professor, during a fair amount of my professional career, I've also argued cases before the United States Supreme Court, about 14 of them, mostly environmental cases, not only environmental law cases. And I've run programs helping people who have arguments before the United States Supreme Court. I established a program when I was in the Georgetown Law Faculty called the Supreme Court Institute, which provides sort of oral argument assistance, moot courts, to attorneys with cases before the court in about 90% of the cases every year.
I have to ask this question. How thrilling, exciting, dumbfounding, crazy is it to argue a case before the Supreme Court?
It is the best. It is unbelievably exciting, fun, nerve-wracking to argue before the court. The justices are very smart. Whatever else you think of them and some of their votes in individual cases, it is a highly well-prepared court with wonderful clerks. They hear only about 70 cases a year, and they're ready for them. And it's just a firestorm up there. When you stand before the justices, you have 30 minutes to argue a case, and you're generally interrupted about 60 to 70 times in those 30 minutes.
Wow.
And so you have to be just ready from the get-go to answer their questions. And the other thing about the argument, which people often don't appreciate, and that is it's a really important moment for the court for this reason. And that is the justices have a tradition, for whatever reason, not to talk among themselves about the case before the oral argument. So when they ask you questions as the advocate, the other justices are learning for the first time what their colleagues think about the case on the bench. So you're able as an advocate to be in the middle of their conversation. And it's quite an opportunity to hear what they're thinking and to watch them try to influence the other justices on the bench by their questions and by your answers.
So let us travel back to 2007 and the 5-4 margin in the Supreme Court, Massachusetts versus the EPA. Regulating carbon dioxide emissions as part of the Clean Air Act. Let's go to that.
Right. So the Supreme Court on April 2nd, 2007, decided this case called Massachusetts versus EPA. And that's what my book is about. And the reason I chose to write about that case is that it's the most important environmental law cases ever decided by the United States Supreme Court about the most important environmental issue of our times. And that's climate change. And it's a fascinating story. And what the book tells is what happened behind the scenes that led to the Supreme Court coming out on April 2nd and announcing this blockbuster decision, a decision which environmentalists refer to as their very own Brown v. Board of Education, the 1954 case which outlawed segregation in public schools. And it tells them what happened behind the scenes from two perspectives. One, what happened behind the scenes among the advocates, the states and environmentalists who were arguing that EPA needed to regulate greenhouse gas emissions to address climate change. What was happening at EPA during the Bush administration? The battles between the lawyers on each side about what to argue and who to argue and how to argue. And then the book also tells what was happening behind the scenes at the courts as well. both the lower court and the United States Supreme Court. And for the latter, I spoke on and off the record with justices who decided the case.
We're speaking with Richard Lazarus, who will be at the Hotchkiss Library with a Zoom event, Virtual Book Signing 2.1, February 23rd at 8 o'clock, The Rule of Five, Making Climate History at the Supreme Court. Okay, we'll switch away from this for a second, because I know with people that will Zoom in, you'll obviously get questions like this. Compare your 5-4 margin back in 2007 and getting that groundbreaking decision. What do you think happens now with the Supreme Court? What has happened to our EPA rules going forward from that point?
Yeah, well, the EPA rules right now are in pretty good shape, because what happened is this. The Obama administration took the EPA and the Bush administration's loss in the Supreme Court. The environmentalists won that case. Massachusetts won that case. And they took that loss and they ran with it for 8 years during the Obama administration. And they enacted a wide series of rules regulating greenhouse gas restrictions in the United States. All of our climate change program in the United States at the federal level is based upon Massachusetts' EPA. And so an extraordinary array of regulations came out during that, which allowed us to do the Paris Agreement as well in 2015. So what's happened since? Obviously, as the Trump administration came in, and they tried to roll back almost every single one of those regulations. That's the bad news, but they also didn't succeed. For 4 years, they did it, but almost all of those were challenged in court. Things have been held even. On the very last day of the Trump administration, January 19th, a D.C. circuit, a very powerful court, basically overturned the Trump's efforts to overturn the Obama rules. So we pretty much held even. And we now have a new administration which plans to basically reinstate all those regulations, has already announced its intent to rejoin the Paris Agreement. So 4 years were lost, but right now the legacy of Massachusetts EPA is well intact.
You know, it's interesting when I look at Massachusetts, and I know this is a little off from your book, but right now there's a decision that has come down in Berkshire County involving a whole bunch of organizations and the Housatonic River and PCBs. What is it with you folks in Massachusetts with coming up with legislation and litigation when it comes to the environment?
I have no idea. I'm not gonna report to speak for the state. I should point out, though, that although the case is called Massachusetts versus EPA, Connecticut was also on the same side as Massachusetts. They just weren't the lead party in the case. But the Connecticut Attorney General's office has been excellent on these issues for quite a long time.
Now, Richard, when you went before the Supreme Court on this, was this your first time in front of the court, or you had been in front of them before?
Well, I wrote about this case, but I myself was not the lawyer who argued the case. The lawyer who argued the case was Jim Mielke with the Massachusetts Attorney General's office. I deliberately did not write a book about myself and about the fact, you know, here I am, amazing, I won this big case. I certainly helped the Massachusetts environmentalist side in this case. I helped prepare Jim Mielke for the argument, as I often do. But this is not a case. This is not a book about me.
You know, it's funny, while I'm speaking to you, I think about the way that people look at the Supreme Court, and it's almost when decision day comes, when the Supreme Court announces their decisions, it's almost become like a sporting event. You know, people follow these rulings. There's the blog from the POTUS blog, the Supreme Court blog, the SCOTUS blog. It's amazing, because at that point in juncture, anybody who is out there becomes a fan or not a fan of law and the Supreme Court. Do you find that a pretty amazing thing, where most people look upon lawyers and court as being boring and very matter of fact, but you get the Supreme Court involved and you get these decision dates coming down, and it's amazing how people just want to know what happens?
Oh, absolutely. It's been a transformation. I argued my first case in the court in October of 19 1986, so quite a while ago. And there was nothing like that back then. We did our work, and even a big case, it was fairly anonymous. Now, with things like SCOTUS blog and the media attention the court gets, I think you're exactly right. It is much more like a sport event. I think there are all kinds of websites you can gamble on the outcome in cases, and the vote spread in cases as well. It's completely different. To some extent, I think that's not a bad thing for the court to get this kind of attention. Its cases are significant. I want the lawyers who are arguing those cases to do the best job possible, but you're certainly right. It's night and day in terms of how the court and its work and the decisions have captured the sort of imagination and attention of the American public. And that was one of my goals in this book. When I argued cases beginning in the late 1980s, I then decided I wanted to write a book about Supreme Court advocacy and what made it so exciting and what made it such a fascinating enterprise, again, from both sides, the advocates and the justices. I decided then, and when the court decided in turn, Massachusetts versus EPA in 2007, I said to myself, I've got the case. It took a while for me to find the perfect case, but I had some sense of the backstory of this case, and it's fascinating in terms of the battles over exactly what to argue in the Supreme Court, an amazing battle about who would argue for the environmentalists and the states in the case, and the battle within the court itself. The case is 5-4, that's as close as it gets. The stakes were about as big as they can get in terms of climate change. And Justice Stevens had to keep those 5 votes, and he had to work really hard to do it. And it took him 8 drafts of his opinion to get that crucial 5th vote. This case could well have turned out the other way. It was on a razor-thin margin. And it was the enormous skill, not just the advocacy before the justice, within the court. And John Paul Stevens was a wonderful individual. One of my favorite things about researching this book was spending time down in Florida with Justice Stevens.
We're speaking once again with Richard Lazarus. Now, one final question. What's your opinion on the way the Supreme Court is operating now? I happen to think that you've got one member of the Supreme Court that is fighting like hell to keep politics out of it, and that is the Chief Justice. And even though he's conservative, I think he's done a good job over the past 2 years of really trying to keep politics out of the court, and he's handled it well. Is that your opinion?
It is my opinion. I have great admiration for the Chief. I would not vote the way he does in some cases. He was in the dissent in Massachusetts with the EPA. But I think he's a person of enormous skill, enormous integrity, who very much cares about the court as an institution and trying to keep politics out of it. It's a hard battle to fight, though. It's a hard battle to fight when the other two branches of government want to try to politicize the court as much as possible. If you have people who run for president, like former President Trump did, and they announce who is on their list and how they'll vote in cases, or you have members of Congress who do the same sort of thing, it's a hard battle to keep the court from not being, or at least not appearing politically partisan. And so it's a tough battle. I think the court, you know, managed to escape the election controversy intact. And that could have been a real test for them.
Well, folks, if you have questions about the Supreme Court, about this decision, want to read the book, have the book, The Rule of Five, Richard Lazarus will be at the Hotchkiss Library via Zoom with a virtual book signing 2.1. It'll be February 23rd at 8 p.m. Go to HotchkissLibrary.org, click on the link there, and then you can register for this Zoom event. And Richard, I want to thank you for taking a few minutes and joining us today, and enjoy your conversation with the folks from our region.
I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, for me, one of the fun things about writing a book like this is a chance to talk to people about the story and about what they think of the court, what they think about climate change. So I was delighted to get the invitation from Hotchkiss.